Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Thursday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Good, bad, crazy martinis for you as usual. We start with the good. And, Jim, gosh, it just seems like a few days ago where the idea of delaying the individual mandate or making any sort of delays or extensions to the rolling out of Obamacare was just this horrific, anarchist, just terrible idea. But now the Democrats, at least some of them, see how horrific this rollout is. Joe Manchin, take it with a grain of salt because, you know, he said that before and then never voted for it during the shutdown. But he's saying it. Mark Pryor's saying it. Jeanne Shaheen's saying it. And it looks like the Obama administration will probably have to relent on this to some extent if something doesn't change radically soon here.
Yeah, but you forgot terrorist there, Greg. You forgot, I don't know, they would throw out like neo-fascist, Jacobin, you know, Quebecois separatist, you know, I figured they really kind of started scraping the bottom of the barrels of variations of dangerous extremists. But yeah, now it's worth noting there are two different extensions that they're talking about here. The one that Republicans really are most interested in, what people say is the linchpin for this, is the individual mandate that you must have insurance really no later than March 31st in order to be considered having insurance for tax purposes. And that way you don't get punished with the tax that they totally insisted was not a tax back when they passed this thing. What they're now saying now is that that deadline is still in place. What they want to do is have the open enrollments partial. Because you actually can't buy insurance at any time of the year. They have certain times of the year they have open enrollment. And they want to extend it all the way to March. Currently it had been, you know, the deadline had been in the neighborhood about February 15th or so. My guess is extending one will, it's like once you all of a sudden a delay is no longer a crazy idea. You know, everyone is walking around in neck braces because of the sudden screeching stop and turnaround of conventional wisdom in the past couple of days. But you end up in a circumstance in where you kind of are saying, well, okay, we can't meet that deadline, but we can still meet that second deadline. It's still reasonable to expect Americans to have purchased insurance through this website by March 31st. Well, I guess it depends, doesn't it? If this, you know, the tech surge, that action figure my son is playing with, manages to get in there and redo all the 5 million lines of code and it all works out super duper within a few weeks, then yeah, you could, you know, lawmakers will feel comfortable saying you must buy health insurance by March 31st. However, it's entirely possible they don't have it fixed and that that's why you've got folks like Joe Manchin saying it's time to push this back a year. Marco Rubio introduced his own bill. Now, as I discussed in the Morning Jolt, up until a couple of days ago, the administration, many of Democratic lawmakers, its backers, Ezra Klein, if you take out the individual mandate, it blows up the whole thing because this means young people won't buy health insurance. And if young people don't buy health insurance, the only people buying it are old and sick. They cost a lot of money and you start up the death spiral. So I'm not even sure Democrats totally understand this bill. And if your entire kind of governing philosophy is based upon the idea of, well, I'm going to spend, you know, I'm going to take money from taxpayers and I'm going to spread it around. I'm going to give it to the groups I like. Then this stuff is very complicated to you. And they can't really understand that the website isn't working. This thing doesn't get, you know, fixed quickly. And it's really more than just the website that's the problem, because then you got sticker shock on the actual prices. And then you've got the issue of whether the accurate data is going to the health insurance companies. And then finally, you have the issue of whether people decide, you know what, to hell with all this. I'm just going to pay the 1% fee this year because that's cheaper than actually buying insurance.
All right. On to martini number two now. And this is a bad martini. The House Energy and Commerce Committee today holding hearings on why the rollout of the online exchanges has been so utterly deplorable. And Jim, I think this can basically be described as a Class A exercise in butt covering by every witness at this hearing. You've got the contractors saying, nobody ever told us not to go live October 1st. Was there ever a pilot program to test this? No, not really. Then you have, you know, a lot of folks, especially on the Republican side, concerned about folks' private information being available to some 2,000 contractors and who knows who else out there who can get access to the exchange information. And then the Democrats saying, well, that's not protected by HIPAA. It's just your Social Security number out there. What's the big deal? So not exactly the finest moment for just about anybody at this hearing.
There's an old saying that if the law is on your side, argue the law. If the facts are on your side, argue the facts. And if neither the law nor the facts are on your side, pound the table a lot. That basically is what Frank Pallone did today. He used the term monkey court. I'm pretty sure he meant kangaroo court. He's not up on his taxonomy and comparative biology of what kind of courts do what. At this hearing, there is nobody from HHS testifying, nobody from Department of Health and Human Services, only the contractors. And unsurprisingly, the contractors are saying it's not our fault. Now, the really intriguing question, which I don't believe they've resolved at this hearing yet, was that there's been this – everyone's looking, so you have to put in a ton of personal information onto this site just to get to the point where you're allowed to comparison shop. After about a week, they put on a menu that kind of gives you, you know, options without listening, you know, plugging in all your personal information. And then yesterday we found out from CBS News that it actually assumes that you're age 27 until you're age 50. And then once you're older than age 50, it just assumes you're age 50 for the remainder, thus giving people unrealistic and much lower prices than they ordinarily would find once they plug in their information. So getting an actual price on the Obamacare website is really difficult to find. And people are saying, was this an intentional design that if you put the prices up front, people will be scared away and say, oh my goodness, this is ridiculous. I don't want to, you know, that in other words, kind of as an effort of spin, they tried to save the price to be very late in the process. And whether that required kind of changing the architecture of the website and how you went through the decision-making process of purchasing the insurance. Imagine, by the way, like, you know, going to a store and not being able to figure out what the price is until right the moment you're at the register. Kind of complicated, isn't it? I mean, all of a sudden you get there and you realize, oh, wait, maybe I don't want to pay that much money. You know, you couldn't compare it to other objects on the shelf and stuff like that. So what Pallone is complaining about is he's trying to cut a bit of a bait and switch. I know he said a button switch, and considering his metaphors that maybe that seems to fit there. That basically saying, well, look, because none of your health, your personal health information is in there, this is, you know, Republicans are overhyping the cybersecurity and identity theft fears here. To which I'm sitting here thinking, does he know how identity theft works? Right? I mean, they don't need to know you've got bronchitis. What they need is a social security number. What they need is your name and your address and, you know, lots of the other basic personal identification there. Frank Pallone has been in Congress since I was living in his district in New Jersey back in the early 90s. Okay, this is a guy who's been around Congress for a really long time. I'm rather skeptical. This is not Nick Burns, your company computer guy, who really knows about cybersecurity type stuff. So basically, he's accusing Republicans of scaremongering. And the flip side of what he's doing is to say that this system with this many problems in which nothing is working correctly, that it is ridiculous to think that it could have cybersecurity issues. Does that seem realistic? You know, the idea that, you know, that everything else is going wrong, but cybersecurity is hunky-dory on this site? I think people are very good reason to be very aware about plugging personal information into this site. I read a couple bloggers who've said they've already found things they find deeply concerning. They don't want to go into the details in order to kind of help facilitate identity theft, but it sounds like the concerns are very real. There is no Republican scaremongering going on this. And so I think that the system is a mess. And the absolute best defense that you can get from HHS when they finally do decide to show up for some of these hearings is going to be, don't blame us. We just hired utterly incompetent contractors.
Yeah, you know it's bad when the Democrats are out there. Howard Dean was blaming the Republicans. Some are blaming the Republican governors who didn't build their own exchanges. Others, like Howard Dean, saying, you know, look, the Republicans have opposed this every step of the way, so that's why it's delayed and ineffective. And the Republican response is obviously, yeah, we tried, but we failed every step of the way. So
it's not like Republican lawmakers were like going in and fiddling with the code,
right?
It's not like Republicans are the contractors to HHS designing this thing. It's not like, you know, Republicans are the ones who have decided you have to have a system that matches up with the IRS to verify the employment, and they need to hook up with, you know, every other insurance. Like, here's the thing. Everything that is being done through this, you know, website is already being done by the website eHealth Insurance and a couple others like that. Okay? This is very doable. It's been very doable in the private sector. The only difference is e-health insurance and the private sector ones don't calculate any subsidy the government's going to give you. So the administration is saying it's utterly ridiculous to expect us to do something slightly more complicated than private sectors have been doing for a long time. And oh, by the way, it's all the fault of these lawmakers who have been outvoted every step of the way.
All right. Well, on to the crazy martini now. It's a special crazy martini today. And that is because we've missed it by a few days. It was actually back on October 19th, but the Three Martini Lunch has now been on Radio America and National Review Online for 3 years. So, Jim, happy anniversary. And I went back the other day as I saw that the date was approaching and thought, what was our first ever crazy martini? And it's always a blessing when you can get handed one of the greatest quotes ever. and it just happens to be your crazy martini on your first ever program. So I take you back, the 2010 campaign, and I take you back to the New York governor's race.
I represent the rent is too damn high party. People working 8 hours a day and 40 hours a week in summer, third job. Women can't afford to take care of their children, feed their children breakfast, lunch, and dinner. My main job is to provide a roof over your head, food on the table, and money in your pocket.
Jimmy McMillan, who, Jim, I'm still pretty sure would be a better mayor than Bill de Blasio.
Yeah, you know, a better governor than Cuomo, in fact. Wow. Well, first of all, happy anniversary, Greg. I feel awful. I totally forgot it. I didn't get you a gift, and I guess I'm sleeping on the couch for that. But beyond that, like, one, you know, I feel like we should have some sort of, like, VH1 had the I Love the 80s, I Love the 90s show. We need some sort of, like, I Love a few years ago. I Love Obama's first term, looking at the wackiness of that, and, you know, Sharon Engel and Harry Reid, I'm Not a Witch, all that kind of stuff that came back. You know, but that was a heck of a time to start a good radio podcast. So it has been a great 3 years, Greg. Thank you for reminding me of that. Thank you for reminding me that the rent is too damn high. If he thinks that's too high, he should try a mortgage. They're even higher. And look, you know, hopefully to many more years to come, Greg.
Yes, absolutely. I enjoy doing this every single day. Jim is fantastic to work with. We have a lot of fun doing this, as hopefully is conveyed through the podcast. And I'm sad to say that either Media Matters or somebody will take Jim's clip of I Love Obama's First Term and take it completely out of context.
There you go. There you go. Yeah. Well, you know, somebody will call me a rhino squid. It's guaranteed.
Oh, so on that note, I don't know, I have a piece of cake or do something to celebrate, and we'll do it all again tomorrow. See you, Jim.
Absolutely. See you tomorrow, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today. Thanks for being with us for the past 3 years, and be sure to join us again on Friday for the next Three Martini Lunch.